Welcome to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to listen to more of America This Week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. Welcome back to America This Week on the Catholic Channel. Here's Father Matt Malone and Tim Reedy.
Well, thanks for joining us. Again, this is America This Week, and if you want to join the conversation, we're talking about Pope Francis's papal exhortation, Amoris Laetitia, and we're talking with Professor Julie Hanlon Rubio about that document, and you can call in at 1-888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 1-888-322-8465. Now, Professor Rubio, before we get kind of more in the weeds with this document, I think a question that a lot of pastors may have, a lot of average Catholics may have, is what did the Pope ultimately say about the question of communion for divorced and remarried Catholics? Can they go? Can they not go? Or is the question still kind of unclear?
Well, I think unclear is probably a good word at this point. When the Synod Fathers left the Synod in 2015, it seemed as though in the final document they left Pope Francis an opening, but it was a very ambiguous opening. But the general wisdom was that they had entrusted the decision to him. And then many expected that there would be great clarity coming out in this document. And it seems that what we have instead, perhaps, is a strong sense that he does not want to make sweeping judgments about these things that will apply to everyone, that he is entrusting pastors and as well entrusting lay people with the task of discernment, of figuring out where they are, of discerning the different situations of people who would be divorced and remarried. So not grouping them all in one category and saying these things look different for different people. People are in different places in their spiritual lives and their moral lives. And so he does seem to entrust that process to them. There's a footnote which explicitly includes the sacraments. Therefore, it seems as though it's a possibility, but it does not seem as though it's a requirement, and probably that'll get interpreted differently in different places.
Well, and
that's my first take.
Yeah, and as you point out, you know, he would have been guilty of self-contradiction if he had actually announced a new rule that would have universal scope, because he spends a great deal of time in the document and in previous documents and saying that, you know, we in Rome cannot account for the multiplicity and the diversity of pastoral situations across a church that has a billion people on five continents.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I like the way that you put that. You say, well, I'm, you know, he has done his job as our teacher in clarifying what it is church teaches in all of its complexity, and is entrusting the people of God with discernment in the particular situation.
I think he is, and I think that's so important. It seems to me that was part of what was important about Vatican II was the lifting up of the goodness of conscience, and he's done that he's done that again here, and then really talked a lot about about discernment, and many people said maybe it's because of his Jesuit background, especially in Ignatian discernment, that he's lifted that up. But there's certainly a lot here that would help pastors who would want to move in this direction, including the idea that he's not using that characterization of living in sin. He, as continually in his papacy, he has spoken about how there can be good in people even when there are irregularities in their lives. You see the good amid the weeds, he always says. And so that's clear here. Also, there's a powerful line, you know, that no one is condemned forever.
Right.
That seems really important. So there's an awful lot of stress on understanding that there's weakness and there's complexity in people's lives, and knowing that they are still among the baptized, and we have to find ways to include.
So how do you respond, Professor, to folks who are you know, very faithful Catholics who love the church and who say, you know, the marriage and the family are in crisis, certainly in the West. This is not the time for ambiguity. We need to be clear about what the rules are and what the discipline is. And he needed to reaffirm that with great clarity, and he didn't.
Yeah, I hear that, and in fact, in my own writing, I have been concerned about those same kinds of things, and I'm particularly concerned about the effects of divorce on children, because the data that we have is pretty distressing on that over the long haul, and there is a danger, I think, in emphasizing the needs of parents that we may overlook, in fact, the needs of children, and we may fail to call people to what we need to call them to. I think he has managed to finesse that, so to speak, in this document. That is, there's a strong welcome, there's a strong recognition that people can gradually come into church teaching, can be in different places, that we can accept weakness and understand it. And yet, I feel like there is also a call here, a call to see the beauty of what could be and strive for that. There's just a lot of language about the ideal of growing in love and sticking with it and not giving up. And my sense of Pope Francis is that's his strategy. Welcome, reach out, understand, but then call, right, and keep calling.
Now, Professor Rubio, it's interesting. I wonder, as a parent yourself, somebody who's raising a family, how this document spoke to you. It's interesting, before this document came out, I was having a conversation with a couple of Jesuit friends, and as much as they were excited about Pope Francis talking about these topics, there was some reservations that were voiced about somebody perhaps who's a celibate, doesn't have this experience, writing about the experience of married couples. Did this document speak to you? Was it able to kind of bridge that gap?
Yeah, I think, I mean, and of course I read it as a theologian and
right.
as a mother and a wife. But there were, as I was reading, I was sort of switching back and forth between those different modes, because there is wisdom here, and I think all of my friends who are theologians found this, that just gets it. and we don't always see that in documents on marriage. There's this beautiful passage on love where he says, we have to realize that all of us are a complex mixture of light and shadows. The other person is much more than the sum of the little things that annoy me. Love doesn't have to be perfect for us to value it, but the other person loves me as best they can with all their limits. And then he goes on to say, and that doesn't mean it's not a real love. It is a true love. It's a real love. It's an earthly love. And I posted that on my Facebook page, and it was interesting because so many people liked that status who aren't necessarily theologians, and then people started, you know, quipping about the annoying part, because we all know. So I don't know how Francis or those who advise them know these things, but they capture things about the reality of relationships that aren't always captured in church documents.
Yeah. You're listening to America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129. I'm Father Matt Malone with Tim Reedy. We're talking with Julie Henlon Rubio of St. Louis University about the Pope's recent letter, Amoris Laetitiae, about the role of the family in contemporary life. You can, of course, join the conversation at 888-3-CATHOLIC. That's 888-322-8465. You know, just picking up on something that you said, Professor Rubio, it seems to me that as good and as true and as beautiful as the Church's teaching on marriage and family life is, it has sometimes been presented in a way that makes it sound like a house that either people don't live in or can't live in, right?
Yeah.
And Francis doesn't do that. Francis kind of meets people where they are and describes the situation as it is. And in a certain sense, if there's ambiguity at the end of this, it's because there's actual ambiguity in the Church's own pastoral practice, right? Because, you know, these discernments happen in countless ways every day in parishes and in conversations. And, you know, that in a sense, you know, that's another way in which he's saying, well, you know, this is the way that it is. And some people see that clarity of doctrine and ambiguity of pastoral practice as the genius of the church, and some people see it as its problem.
Right. Yes. Although I was really gratified this week because insofar as theologians have already spoken out, and many have, I've seen really across the board in my more conservative friends, my more progressive friends. I mean, there are some critics on more of the extreme edges, and certainly there are many things that any of us might have liked to have seen. But on the whole, there's an awful lot of agreement that there's so much good in this. And you don't always see that with church documents.
Right.
And that's part of Francis's genius, too, I think.
And I think a lot of people who are sympathetic to the situation of gay and lesbian Catholics said, well, he actually didn't go far enough there. And then some said, well, but he is actually using this language that gay people use to describe themselves. And so there's kind of a step forward. And as you say, people on the extremes will say, well, he either goes too far or not far enough.
Yes. And one of on that issue in particular, I think it's very difficult, especially for young adult Catholics, to understand how this pope that they want to really love can nonetheless maintain this position. And the one thing that I would say to them is that one thing that is helpful here is that it's just not an emphasis in the document.
Right.
And so whereas in other renderings of the church teaching on marriage, some coming from the U.S. bishops and other quarters, there's been a greater emphasis on how gay and lesbian relationships take away from heterosexual marriage. Here you don't find that so much. He repeats the teaching, quoting from other documents, and then really just moves on to other issues. It's not his main concern. His main concern is trying to speak to the broad diversity of families existing in the church and to call them to live the vocation better.
Right. You're listening to America This Week. We're talking about the family and the Pope's new document on the family that came out last Friday. And we have Greg from Atlanta. Greg, are you there? Greg?
Yes.
Hello, Greg. Welcome to America This Week.
Hey, thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on?
Well, I am a permanent deacon in the Archdiocese of Atlanta, and I minister a lot in my parish to people in the circumstance of divorce and remarriage. And I know there are a lot of people who don't understand all the complexities of this, and I thought the new apostolic exhortation from Pope Francis hit the nail right on the head and opened up you know, the possibility of, in the right cases, with discernment and spiritual direction, possibility of communion for one who is really an innocent victim of divorce and really needs to receive the sacrament. So, to me, it's wonderful, and it is to the rest of the clergy that I know.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Deacon. Appreciate the call. Professor Rubio, are you hearing that from a lot of folks?
I am. I mean, I heard it as I was speaking synod before the document came out. I heard pastors hoping that Pope Francis was moving in this direction. Some of them already move in this, already moving ahead of the Pope, but others really waiting and wanting to have that direction affirmed. It is important for some to have that sense from the church as a whole that this is at least a legitimate direction to go in.
Now, Professor Rubio, you mentioned Chapter 4 before, which I think is helpful because that's what I've been told, too, is that, and I've dipped into it a bit, that's a great chapter to start with if perhaps you're, you know, a busy parent and don't have time to dig into 200 pages. What are some of the other sections that are worth the attention specifically of, you know, families, people who are living out this reality every day?
Well, I think probably... Yeah, definitely starting with Chapter 4. I'm going to be thinking about this a bit more because I'm going to write a guide
that's
designed for lay people to use if they're reading it in parishes. In chapter two, he talks a lot about just the experiences and challenges of family. And so there you can see where he's heard all the results of all the surveys that happened before the Senate and all the different things that impact people's ability to get married and to sustain marriage. So everything from poverty and migration to just cultural trends that make it difficult to sustain commitment. So I think it's a nice complex discussion. Marriage is not just about two individuals, there are all these social factors that are going into it. And then the chapter that is on, it's actually called Love Made Fruitful. And it is about children, but it's about so much more than that. It's a really a broader sense of what fruitfulness means. And that's, I think, where you can see him connecting his teaching on family to the other part of Pope Francis that people really love, which is his preaching on social justice and calling families to embody that kind of expansive fruitfulness. So he quotes from this beautiful poem, and which reads in part, "If I love you, it's because you are my love, my companion, and my all. And on the street, side by side, we are much more than just two." So it's a vision of two people walking together, but with their eyes focused outward, and with a mission for working for a better world, not just for the good of their family.
Now, Professor Rubin, I wonder if you could speak too to something that one of our commentators brought up, but you know how this document talks specifically, you know, feminism, the issues that women face. For example, it talks about, you know, violence against women as an issue. So this seems to mark a change too in the church's attention to these issues.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things I would say from the beginning is that Pope Francis has chosen to use inclusive language in his documents, which is a new move, and that is just, I can't tell you how different that is, how different experience it is to read a document that says men and women instead of men when they're talking about men and women. So the inclusive language is quite welcome. And then there are explicit passages which say, yeah, the church is not against feminism. There are feminisms, so a recognition that this is a diverse set of ways of thinking and movements. And there are some things, obviously, that we oppose. But other things that we're quite on board with and that we are grateful to feminism for continuing the struggle for women, and especially we find common ground on issues of violence. There have been mentions of violence in other documents, but this document says more than others have and recognize that violence and domination take place in marriage as well as outside. So I definitely saw those as being progressive moves.
Right. Well, Julie Hanlon Rubio is professor of Christian ethics at St. Louis University and the author of Christian Theology of Marriage and Family and Family Ethics, Practices for Christians and Hope for Common Ground. Thank you very much, Dr. Rubio, for being with us today.
Thanks for having me. Good talking to you.
Okay. When we come back, we are going to be talking about the role of priest councils. And for some of our listeners, probably telling them for the first time what a priest council is. But it actually plays an important role in the life of the church in this country, and we're going to talk about that when we come back on America This Week on the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.
Thank you for listening to the podcast of America This Week, courtesy of the Catholic Channel on Sirius XM 129. If you want to hear the full show every week, subscribe to Sirius XM and tune in on Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern to the Catholic Channel, Sirius XM 129.